Hi, you're listening to the My Body, My Story podcast.
And then we wake up one day and we go, oh, I didn't sleep. The bed's wet because I'm sweating. My joints are hurting. And what the fuck's going on?
This is the 45 over 45 chapter where we celebrate rule breakers and role models, the women who inspire us to live life our way and to show their sensuality, beauty, soul, and true essence. Here we talk about what it's like to be 45 plus, adjusting to the changes that come with time, and we'll listen to the stories of our participants. If you have an interesting story to share, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us on info@alexandrawalkout.com, and that's Alexandra spelled with a KS, or visit our website, alexandrawalkout.com.
Hello, everyone, and I'd like to introduce our guest speaker, Tracy, who is author of Sexy Aging Podcast, as well as international fitness trainer, entrepreneur, and mentor to women within the fitness industry. If you have some questions or concerns about the changes that are happening to you physically, mentally, and emotionally after 45, I really recommend you listen to her Sexy Aging podcast featuring global authorities in women's healthy aging, covering hormonal health, fitness, nutrition, relationships, entrepreneurships, goals, and dreams for the future. And it's a really, really great content. And one of the Tracy's guests said that your podcast probably helps women more than your doctor. And I can't agree more with that. So listen to all the episodes. It brings you back to feeling that I'm all right. So Tracy, welcome.
Thanks, Alex.
Please tell us about yourself and tell us what are you most passionate about?
Yeah, thanks, Alex, for having me. It's a real honor to be the guest on your podcast. We're podcasting together. So for the listeners out there, I'm Alex's guest first, then she's going to be my guest. And this is how we roll as women. And I think if we talk about what I'm passionate about, I think it's really helping women with the things that they're passionate about and doing it in a way that they feel really good and really authentic to who they are. A big part of that, my life has been in fitness. You've mentioned that. So it was really about helping women with their physical goals. But you find that over time, those goals there is some crossover between physically how it makes them feel emotionally and mentally. And just over time, I've realized that those two other factors, emotional and mental wellness, are just as important as the physical wellness. I got into the podcast, actually one of my friends dared me to do it. Like she said, I think you can do this. And I'm like, oh no, I don't do technical things like this. I don't know how to edit. I don't know how to video. I don't know, you know, like I can teach classes and I can tell people how to get themselves fit. But when it comes to, you know, Zoom links and all that sort of stuff, I don't know about that. But she said, look, you just have a knack for conversation with people and bringing out the best in people with your conversation and asking like quite what some people would seem very open questions, but in a way that's really deeply caring. Like I do want people to feel comfortable when they share their stories with me. And so during the podcast, I'm very open about some of the questions I ask and I feel that I can help people have a good conversation that benefits all women out there. Just Alex, you mentioned that if you're over 45, you should be listening to my podcast. But recently, I think I've downgraded the age to 35. And the reason I say that is I feel like if we knew what we know today about menopause, of which most people don't know anything.
That's true. Saying, yep.
Most people don't know anything and we're only just having this conversation now and it feels like a little bit too late. We have the period talk when we're 10 years old, right? So at school or our mums or the nurse or a combination of people, women generally, will tell us what to expect through puberty. And that conversation usually happens around 10 or 11.
In some countries and some it doesn't happen at all.
Yeah, in some countries, Africa doesn't happen at all. And then they're like, wake up one day freaking out, think they're dying. But for us through perimenopause, which is a natural part of life, it's a natural stage of living. It's called the third age. We can actually really start to understand what's going to happen to our bodies from about the age of 35. And isn't that ironic that GPs tell us that it's really good to have babies before the age of 35? And you've got all these women, me included, thinking, no, I've got this. I can have babies at 40. And I did have one at 42, but it wasn't easy. And there was a whole lot of shit in between. Multiple miscarriages and what have you. But it's not lost on me that we need to really probably have this conversation around changing hormones in the third age at about 35. That's what I've learned in the last few weeks. So I just wanted to share that with your audience as well, because, you know, we kind of leave it too late. And then we wake up one day and we go, oh, I didn't sleep. The bed's wet because I'm sweating. My joints are hurting. And what the fuck's going on? Sorry, am I okay to swear?
Yeah. And I was surprised to find out that many women, and from your podcast as well, that many women start experiencing these symptoms much earlier, and even in their late 30s, early 40s. That was for me a huge, huge surprise, because in my head, it was like around 50 plus when you just start feeling it.
And yeah, me just, too.
From your podcast, I learned a lot. So it's seriously, it's like listening to Wikipedia or encyclopedia, you know, like wow, I didn't know that. So I seriously stuck onto your podcast episode. So listening. And, you know, I was feeling much better after listening to that, because then I just seriously realized I'm okay. I thought, oh, something wrong is going with me and this is too early. That can't be right. And then I hear women and professionals and talking about that. And or the other thing which I noticed with me, that for me started being hard to exercise. And in one of your podcasts, you said that actually you have to change this routine you used to have in your 30s, yeah, like 20s, it's completely different. So you mentioned that, I think, yourself, that even with your routine, like as your professional trainer, fitness trainer since your early age, you had to stop doing what you did before.
So, yeah, and I'm actually still investigating that. I still haven't found all the answers, to be honest, Alex. And I think that's why I keep reaching out to people and getting their professional or tried and true take on it. And it has to be, for me, science-based. Like it can't be, you know, and the person has to be credible. So when I invite guests on that in the fitness space and GPs and things, they need to be the credible people that I know that I would have a conversation with, walk away and go, yeah, that's absolutely true. And that will work for me and everyone else. So I won't talk to anyone. Well, I have guests, obviously, that aren't, you know, experts in the science field, but they're just amazing women. And I think that really helps as well. Just a general lighthearted conversation around what it means to be aging now, what it means to us, and just the fact that we don't feel marginalized. You know, we want to be seen. We want to be heard. We have contribution to our communities, to our families, to our friends. And now just, you know, opening up conversations around the fact that, yeah, we're perimenopausal or menopausal women, and it's just something that's going on, but it doesn't stop us living our best life. We just need all the pieces to pull together so that we can cope with the symptoms and get out there and not lose your mojo, you know?
That's true. Do you have a special program for women with the premenopause symptoms, or are you still researching it, and are you gonna to introduce it, or
you're about the 50th person that's asked me that. I don't. And because everyone keeps asking,
maybe you should.
Should I be doing this? I do have some plans, but I do tend to direct women to people that I trust that have programs, and I have mentioned those programs in previous podcasts. So at this stage, I would be recommending other people's programs because I have some other things that I'm looking at doing in this space. One of the things, I'll just mention it to you, because obviously if I say it now, I'm now putting it out there into the universe. Is that how it works?
Yep.
Okay, so I would like to address the woman in the workplace conversation with menopausal women in the workplace. And it's become known to me that 1 in 5 women over 40 will leave their career because they cannot deal with their symptoms, or they feel unconfident because so much is happening to their bodies, they're now feeling like they can't do their job. Wow. Right? That's a huge percentage of the workforce that takes away their IP, their knowledge, their experience, their skills, and their ability to mentor younger people coming up through the industry. And they just walk away because they're having this level of confidence issue that they can't do the job anymore because they're getting, you know, hot flashes and brain fog and, you know, all these things that they feel will affect their performance at work, and they just leave their jobs. And that stuff for me is really heartbreaking, I think, but I know so many incredible women that have so much to contribute. And if they're leaving because they feel they have no support, no one to talk to, and they don't know what's going on, then someone needs to look into that. So that's actually an area that I'm feeling like a bit of passion towards, and maybe I would create some kind of workplace workshop for companies and sort of address the issue, put it out there and say, look, here's how you can support your woman workforce. I think it comes under the diversity conversation.
Yeah.
And then, it's only been 3 days, but I've been up every day at 4 a.m. and I've started to write a book.
Yeah. That's how usually you start big things happening. Like when you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and you have this idea, and then it develops.
And you can't stop. So it's happened.
This is it.
This has happened. And now I've said it on your podcast. So it's like really happening.
Great.
Oh, no. So
we're witnessing a history.
But it's going pretty well so far. So I have had a couple of friends say, you know, through the podcast and the fact that you've spoken so openly about your symptoms, and we had no idea, Trace, that you were going through this. Like people are saying to me, why didn't you talk to me? I'm like, because you're so much younger. And I thought that you wouldn't. I think I had all this sort of internal angst that they would judge me. Yeah. Or that I would be no longer valuable in the space that I was in, or that I would age myself by having this conversation, right? So the fact that they're now hearing it through the podcast, they've come back to me and said, you need to write this down. You need to write down, you know, what you are experiencing with each of those 27 symptoms you've spoken of, and tell us about the day that you experienced it and what was going on. So I've started, and we're up to day 2.
Excellent. Looking forward to see that. So let's move to your to you and everyone's.
I thought we had been talking about me.
I mean, your more deeper feelings, like about aging.
And
so everyone knows that with age we have some changes, you know, but what positive changes you experience with age? Like, okay, this premenopause thing, but what positive changes you feel, and you're happy that you're aging?
Yeah, I think the first thing that comes to mind is the no bullshit reader. So what that means is like I can cut through things that are not relevant to me, or, you know, and when it comes to judgment and stuff around people or things or action, I really feel like that's dialed down so much. I just have this massive amount of empathy for people's situations. And I will verbalize that. I'll, you know, be very comfortable in that space as an older woman to say, look, I'm so sorry that this is happening to you. I don't know that I can fix it. Is there anything that I can do? Is listening enough for you? You know, like I feel really comfortable with that conversation. And knowing what's good for me and being able to say yes to that, no to that. I think that's one of the best parts. There's not a lot of angst around making decisions. Trusting my instincts, my gut, is huge. and to the point that I could literally argue a point with my husband on a gut instinct, and he will say, "You can't argue on a gut instinct," and I'll be like, "Yeah, no, I can, because yes. I've proven it before. I said this, it was my gut, and it proved true." And I'm, and the other part is, I'm fine to be wrong. There's the other part to it. I'm fine. I'm not going to be hung up about being wrong. I'm okay to learn from my mistakes, you know. And mm-hmm. and the other thing is, you learn a lot faster from your mistakes as well, and you don't take it so personally. So that's about five things. Yeah. I could go on and on, but like, yeah, I'm loving that. Yeah,
great. So, and what is the biggest challenge you're experiencing at the moment?
Well, I mean, right now, in this moment, I have relocated countries mm-hmm. Back to my homeland, and I haven't lived in New Zealand for over two decades. So I left as a very assertive, gung-ho 30-year-old out to prove that I could do whatever I put my mind to. I was very fit, very strong, very driven, competitive, assertive, and just, you know, out there to make a difference. And I did it. Like, I made a difference, and I've left my legacy in Southeast Asia in fitness, and helped to train up thousands of trainers that are making a difference to other people's lives. So I can tick the boxes there. But through the journey, and I think when I became a mum, the assertiveness and the competitiveness dialed down a lot because it became apparent to me that when you become a mum for the first time, there's you don't have, I mean, there are books on it and stuff, but no one can tell you how it's going to feel.
Yeah.
And then you have to reach out to other women to get that support. So that can't be a competitive space for me, you know, like to ask and to make myself vulnerable enough to say, you know, I really need some help here. I'm finding this really difficult. Mm-hmm. And so because I was able to do that, it felt like I changed through the years because of my kids. Yeah. So now I'm at a point where, you know, I'm back in New Zealand and I'm a different person. I feel I'm kinder. I'm more open. Mm-hmm. I don't want to compete with people, but I know that I'm really good at what I do. And I own that, and I own it, but not in a place that's, it's not like I have to prove it, you know? I have no desire to prove myself. I think that if people know that I'm valuable in their space, that it will be a natural thing that happens, that we end up working together. So,
Do you think it's the main reason for that is aging, or maybe it's because you lived in a different country and you met people from different cultures and like you were more open, mind open? Do you think it's connected with age or your living abroad?
Yeah, that's a good question, but I definitely think it's both. Mm. You know, it's almost 50-50, and it's an experience versus growing through the experience situation.
Yeah.
And obviously when you put yourself outside your comfort zone, like you leave your country, live in another country where they don't speak English and all those things that go with it. I mean, you've got that experience too. Mm. They don't speak your
Twice.
Mother tongue. Yeah. Right. It's a fast track to growth. And if you embrace it with open arms, you're going to grow through the experience. And then the years just help you deal with the challenges of that. Yeah. I think, yeah.
So, describe your greatest accomplishment so far, because I'm sure there will be much more in the future.
I think a lot of people would probably say this, and it's the first thing that comes to mind, but it's probably my children. You know, through even though I've had quite an amazing career, which I'm really grateful for, and it has been amazing, and it still is amazing. It's not over. There's still things that are happening. There's something that happened this morning, you know, before this podcast, that sort of reaffirms that I'm still needed in the industry. So, but I feel like my kids, I can confidently say this right now, because I have a 16-year-old girl. Wow. Anyone that has teenage girls will know that it's quite challenging, you know, from about 11 through even probably up to 18 for most people. But I would sort of celebrate right now that my 16-year-old is an incredible human. Mm. She does things and thinks quite different to the way I do, but she's very comfortable telling me about the way she thinks and feels. And that's, I think, great. That open communication with her is my greatest accomplishment, because I would have always wanted that, so I know how she's feeling and what she needs as a child, because she's still my child, you know. And then my son, he's 8, so there's quite an age gap. He has some learning challenges and ADHD, and my greatest accomplishment with him is for him to be also open and communicative, and he's very touchy-feely, huggy, and I love that. I love that. So that's an accomplishment, is to get lots of hugs from him. It's probably not going to happen in the next year, but I think just being, you know, just happy as a family unit. And I think a lot of people feel this way, especially after, you know, COVID shines a light on the things that you would consider an accomplishment. Yeah.
That's true. So I love this question. And what advice would you give your 30-year-old self?
Oh, chill out. Just back it up. You don't have to change Rome in a day. It'll be there tomorrow. You can still fix it up tomorrow. I guess because when I was 30, I moved countries and I felt like I had to prove myself, you know. So I really stepped into that space and embraced all the challenges that came with it. And there were a lot of challenges, different way of thinking, different cultures, different languages. So I would just tell myself to just maybe step back a little bit, just look at what's going on around you and listen to what people are saying before you, you know, give your perspective. Because often you'll learn a lot more by what people are telling you, or what they're not saying, just reading their body language and seeing, you know, their comfort level to communicate with you. I think that's, what I would tell myself 20 years back.
And what advice would you give to younger women who will eventually undergo these changes, what we are going now?
I think younger women are in a really, really good time because they have the resources and, you know, the digital content that they can absorb. So they can access these conversations. They can access content online, podcasts. There's so much out there to help them. And I just had a conversation with a 24-year-old who I'm really loving. I've had a couple of conversations with her. She's new in the fitness industry and she's giving me her perspective on life. And I'm sitting back and listening and I absolutely love it. What I notice is Gen Z, who are those younger ones, early 20s, I have really embraced the mindfulness aspect of living, like yoga, meditation, retreats, getting out in nature. Those are actually really important to them. And that wasn't so important to me back, you know, back in the day. I was probably clubbing way too much, but these women are, you know, really embracing the mental wellness aspect of life. And seeking it and having really good conversations. I'm really motivated by the younger generation. I actually said it. I'm learning a lot just by listening to them, you know.
Yeah, I love learning from younger people. Even in my industry, it's very important to learn. And I think fitness as well. Like, you know, there are new approaches or like that's what you mentioned, that more younger people conscious about their healthy living, about the awareness and like what they're doing and meditation. I have a son, he's 21. He's not doing meditation, but I'm surprised at how he's thinking, his way of thinking, you know, it's more mature, more conscious, you know. And I don't think I teach him. It's like somehow he finds this information out there in the web or on YouTube, and it's really a different generation, as you said.
It's awesome. They don't all have to be meditating, but they're so much more conscious of the planet and things like that. So you do learn a lot from them. And I actually feel a little bit guilty, you know. But we just didn't know what we didn't know about what was happening with the planet. And now, you know, you've got these younger people standing up and going, hey, enough is enough, man. Look what we've inherited. So
it's a guilt, like it's your fault that we inherited this.
Yeah, I'm taking responsibility for that too. So I'm making differences in our lives. But I've learned from younger people as well. But I do live quite a conscious, minimalist life. I think it's the right way forward.
Yeah. And I noticed that the younger generation, they are going towards minimalism. Like, it's interesting. Like, they're not attached to things like our generation. I don't know what is it to, like, why, but it is, I noticed that.
They value experiences, and that's where they spend their money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they would spend their money on an experience. So overseas trips, yoga retreats, mountain climbing, those kind of things as examples, versus, you know, buying a latest handbag, which would make me feel really happy.
So do you think, like, I ask all women I interview, that where do you think the idea of perfect body image come from? And I want to, because of this conversation, I want to add, and do you think that in the younger generation, it's going to be a different body image?
It is already. So we've done some market research, especially for fitness, because we want to understand how we should be marketing to the generation that's going to sustain fitness clubs in the future with their memberships. And what Generation Z have told us is, we don't want you to tell us the way we should look. We want you to give us marketing and imagery that represents body confidence, that this is the body I have now, and I'm going to be confident if I feel strong, not just physically, but mentally. So if you're going to market to me, market that message. And they've already told us that. And that's where things have to change. And that's not just fitness. I think that's, you know, fashion. You can see it now. You can see that things are changing. Diversity, having more age range, having more, gender is fluid. Like, why do I have to be he or she? Who says that? You know, like, I think those things are important conversations as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, body confidence, not body shape.
And so what does it mean to you, feeling good and looking good? And what comes first?
Sleep comes first.
That's right.
Because if I get enough sleep, everything's going to be good. And I often speak of this, and I write of it. About the power of sleep. I'm a compulsive, obsessive person when it comes to sleep. I've been tracking my sleep for 5 years. I have like that much data. I think that Google should start paying me a commission on that data. I just feel like, okay, if I get good quality sleep, then I wake up and I feel good. And when I feel good, I feel like I take the time to perhaps do my hair a little bit longer, choose something nice to wear. I mean, it all kind of comes together. When I've had a really bad night for whatever reason, usually some reason, not so much because of menopause symptoms for me now, because I have been so conscious with my sleep, but I do find that I really don't have the motivation or the energy or the drive to put effort into looking good.
Yeah. So, but what do you do? Do you just like force yourself go to bed at 10 o'clock, or it just comes naturally now, or you really have to force?
Yeah, I mean, it's a conscious decision. Conscious decision, to do it. And because I'm getting up at 4 to write, I have to be in bed by 8. And I'll usually be asleep by 8:30. And that started to happen. 8:30, man. 8:30! I would never in my wildest dreams have thought that I would be saying this publicly, that I'm going to bed at 8 o'clock at night. But the thing is, I think what's changed is that it's really dark here.
Yeah.
You know, it's daylight savings. And I never had that up in Asia. So, and Asia is a late night culture as well. So people are out late. Like, you can shop at 11 o'clock at night. But here it's like, it's different, you know, back in New Zealand. And it's good because that's how your circadian rhythm actually works really well. You're much healthier if you are sleeping when it's dark, awake when it's light. And that's a good thing for your body. It's good for your pituitary gland, your thyroid. So because I'm getting up at 4, I've got to go to bed by 8. So it is a decision, because if I don't go to sleep, then I don't feel good in the next day and I just don't have anything to write about. I just don't have the same flow. So I know one thing impacts the other. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what makes you feel the most beautiful?
Wow, you got me on that one. it's funny because I ask my guests on the podcast, you know, how do you make yourself feel sexy? And now you're asking me something kind of similar and I'm like,
It's a bit different. It's a bit different.
Who's on the other foot? Oh my gosh. What makes me feel beautiful? Actually, it's kind of a simple thing. I think it's movement, mindful movement makes me feel beautiful. So like if I do yoga, and it's a really nice flow, or if I'm in a great class or I'm practicing by myself, I just feel like the ability to really open my body, like, and feel mobile also makes me feel beautiful. It was the thing that jumped to mind. Like when I'm, you know, really reaching and expanding, that feels beautiful to me.
For me, it sounds like the moment when you're comfortable in your body, when you feel this comfort of your body, is that right? That's the moment.
That's
where
true. Yeah.
And my last question is, what is your favorite quote about being a woman, or saying, or your own thought?
Yeah, I mean, I've actually been given so many wonderful, wonderful quotes. I think it's the one by Maya Angelou that one of my guests gave me. Do you mind if I quote it? I have to find it on my phone. This is what happens in live podcasts. So I'm going to find that quote. And it talks about being a woman. And it actually really resonated with me as well. So where is it? Ah, here it is. It's called Phenomenal Woman, and it was recommended to me by one of my podcast guests, Sasha Coburn, and I absolutely love this. Pretty woman, wonder where my secret lies. I'm not cute or built to suit a fashion model's size. But when I start to tell them, they think I'm telling lies. I say it's in the reach of my arms, the span of my hips, the stride of my step, the curl of my lips. I'm a woman, phenomenally, phenomenal woman, that's me.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you very much for joining us in my podcast. I enjoy our conversation.
Thanks. I love conversation. It's great to be here.
All right, Tracy. Thank you very much. And I hope we'll meet again, maybe in a year time. I'll see your development on your projects, you know, and maybe you tell us something more interesting things about body, sleep, aging.
I'll keep going. And you keep going too. I'm going to come by and you're going to take a photo of me.
Sure. Or maybe one time I will come to New Zealand, which is my dream, and I can do it there.
That would be gorgeous. I'll look forward to that. Thanks, Alex. Right.
Thank you very much.
If you have an interesting story to share, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us on info@alexandrawalcott.com, and that's Alexandra spelled with a KS, or visit our website, alexandrawalcott.com.